The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library with additional support from Clark County Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, and Wright Memorial Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. It's my pleasure to welcome to the program Jency Willett. She's got a new novel out. It's called Amy Among the Serial Killers. She joins us on the telephone in, where are you, Southern California?
Yep, I'm in Escondido, which is northern San Diego County.
All right. Well, that's kind of the setting of this story, isn't it?
Yep. I'm very lazy. It's set in my, when you're in her house, it's basically mine.
Uh-huh.
That way I don't have to make up anything.
Okay. I take it there's other books in this series. Don't you have another book about Amy?
Yeah, I have three. It's sort of an accident. I wrote the writing class, I don't know how many years ago, figuring it'd be kind of cool to have a writing class that had a murder in it, because I always felt, I used to run workshops, and I used to think someday somebody's probably going to get killed, because somebody always gets killed. So I did that, and then I did a follow-up. I couldn't think of anybody else to write about except Amy, and so I wrote a book about accidents. She hits her head in a birdbath. It's not a murder mystery or anything. And then when I was trying to think of something to write, I just figured, oh, I might as well do Amy again, because I already know the characters, and I certainly know Amy.
Okay.
So it was an accidental trilogy. I didn't set out to do that.
The second book, was that Amy Falls Down?
Yeah, Amy Falls Down,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not, I'm not in love with the idea of writing mysteries. It's just that it's kind of fun,
uh-huh.
I mean, what I'm really interested in is character and how people behave and what they think and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've got to give it to you. You have one of the best book titles in your bibliography of any book title that I've ever known, and I'm sure you've received that compliment before for your book, winner of the National Book Award. I mean, talk about a great title.
I know. Do you know the story of that title?
No.
Okay, I'll tell you. I've told other people, but I'll tell you. It's what I wanted for the title for that book was fame and honor, because it's a Schopenhauer quote that I use as an epigraph, and it was perfect for a number of reasons. And St. Martin's said, no, that's a stupid title. It's two abstract nouns, and nobody's going to buy that. So come up with something better. And I was annoyed, so I wrote out a list of 10 really dumb titles, and what I thought was a dumb title was winner of the National Book Award, and because I had a friend years ago who made a student film called Winner of 12 Academy Awards, and I thought that was funny. So I thought, all right, you're going to call it winner of the, and they said, well, I don't know if we can do that because, libel and, they might not. I said, it's fine, but that's the one. And my plan was that I would keep shooting silly titles at them until they let me have the title I wanted. And I forgot about it, and I was working on finishing the book, and then they call and they say, legal says it's okay. There's already buzz about the title, and I said, what are you talking about? I was horrified. People are going to be ticked off. It's not. You didn't win anything. And it turned out, of course, they were right and I was wrong. So the brilliance was my publisher, not me. I was just being a smartass.
And what would have been really brilliant would be if it then did win the National Book Award. Right?
Yeah, wouldn't that have been cool?
My guess is Jency Willett, Amy Among the Serial Killers. This is really a book about writing, isn't it?
Yeah. All of them are. I mean, all three, because that's all I know. Writing and reading are my complete understanding of the world is based on those two things.
Uh-huh.
I've done very little in my life besides that, So, yeah, it's mostly about writing.
Well, as the story opens, Carla is dealing with writer's block.
Mm-hmm.
And then throughout the story, Amy Gallup, the retired writing teacher, is also apparently dealing with writer's block.
Right. Well, but she does manage to write some stuff. It's just that she is me, basically, except she's a better writer than I am. But she and I both don't write a lot, and we don't find writing fun, and we have a hard time coming up with ideas. So, yeah. I'm not one of the. Stephen King has always amazed me. There's a man who loves writing and he'll spend 12 hours a day writing, and I don't know how you can do that. I would go insane.
Mm-hmm.
I have to have an idea, and it's the ideas that are hard.
I had the cartoonist Roz Chast on the show a number of years ago.
Oh, she's wonderful.
And she is wonderful, and she'd written this memoir about dealing with the deaths of her parents, and she had her parents' ashes in the closet, and she just kind of left them there, and she didn't really know what she was going to do with them. And as we open your book, Carla is dealing with this crisis because she's got this urn with her with her mother's ashes, and she had a troubled relationship with her mother, and
her mother's horrible.
Yeah, and her mother wanted her to spread the ashes on the grave of Judy Garland.
Mm-hmm.
Now the connection here is that Carla is kind of like Judy Garland in some ways, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in the sense that she was a child actress, and she was very talented child actress, but she managed to get out of that. It's not just like she ever really enjoyed it. She was, her mother basically picked mm-hmm. her out.
And
she didn't have a choice.
A lot of this also goes back to a trauma that she experienced that really mm-hmm. kind of shut down some aspects of her life.
Right. Right, it did. She sort of stopped growing because of it. Not literally, but stopped growing as a woman and as an adult, basically. It made her life very difficult.
So she's never really...
I find her a likable... Do you like her as a character?
I think she's wonderful. She's so innocent.
Mm-hmm.
And she somehow has parlayed her existence into this successful business, which it just seems to almost function without her input.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about the business.
Oh, I always thought, you know, have you read, when people have writing retreats, I mean, I used to do writing workshops mostly, sometimes privately and sometimes through university extensions, when they would just meet like a class. But apparently you can pay money to go to a retreat where you go to some beautiful bucolic place and you have, you know, utter silence and birds singing, and you're sitting there with a beautiful lamp. It would drive me insane. I could not possibly write under the conditions like that. I have to have distraction. I just couldn't. Anyway, my thought about that was that you could actually, a writer's retreat that's sort of set up the way Carla's is, where people are basically put into cells and forced to pay a lot of money for a sunless room with just a desk in it would actually be successful. And I think it would actually work. But I don't, as far as I know, nobody's ever tried that. But it works for Carla. She's very successful at it.
And I don't want to do any spoilers here, but I don't think it's a spoiler to talk about the first murder that we know about, is it?
Right, because that happens right at the beginning.
Oh, okay. So Carla's kind of doing a trade-out with a shrink. This woman mm-hmm. is trying to help Carla deal with her mother issues and her love life issues or non-issues. And,
right.
And she's doing this trade-out where this woman is allowed to use one of these cells to do her mm-hmm. writing in exchange for her counseling. And this poor woman dies.
Yeah.
In her cell.
Right.
And Carla finds her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is where we start the murder trail. And this is a very funny book, but there's certainly a lot of chopping and slicing and cutting in this book.
Yeah, that's what I figure people want. I mean, it's not, it's the thing about serial killing, and I've just watched an awful lot of, I don't tend to watch TV, but I'll listen to it while I'm doing crossword puzzles or something. And a lot of the things I listen to are true crime, supposedly true crime stuff. And we just seem to be fascinated by serial killers, and I'm not sure why. I don't exempt myself from that. I do it too, but I don't know. That's uh-huh. what got me thinking I should, if you're going to have a serial killer, then there should probably be dismemberment, because that's apparently what we want. I don't mean we really want it. We're not monsters, but these are the stories that we fall in love with for some reason.
It's weird, isn't it?
It's really strange.
You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, fact-based journalism in the service of democracy. I've been joined by Jency Willett on the telephone in Escondido, California. Her new novel, just coming out, Amy Among the Serial Killers. And Jency has a virtual event in connection with Joseph Beth Bookstore in Cincinnati. She's going to be in conversation this coming Wednesday evening at 7 p.m. with, is it Rebecca Burkett? Is that how you pronounce her name? Rebecca Burkett and Jency are going to be talking, and you can be a part of this conversation. If you go to their website, you can RSVP at www.josephbeth.com to receive a link to join the event. That is at 7 o'clock Wednesday night, August 24th. So I when I booked this interview, I told your publicist I will give you a plug or two on that.
Okay, that'll be nice.
So I'm the shell. You are the creative person who can, you know.
Shilling is creative.
Yeah.
Marketing is creative. I don't know how to do it, but
it can be. It can be. I don't particularly like doing it, but I seem to be good at it for some reason. It's kind
of, and these days they expect writers to market too, and I won't do it. I don't have the skill set, and it just drives me nuts.
Well, tell us about yourself, Jency. Who are you?
I'm old. I come from Rhode Island. I was married to a wonderful man who was a professor of electrical engineering back in Rhode Island, and we had a son in 1987, and then my husband died, and so I came out here because my family had moved out here, and I figured my child should be with family.
Mm-hmm.
And he is now a fabulous jazz musician, and in fact, I'm going to be doing a reading here at Warwick's in La Jolla, and I'm going to have music because all readings should have music. I've done this before; it works great. So anyway, so I came out here and I did some workshopping, and I also, until recently, for about 18 years, I did online tutoring in essay writing and grammar. I love grammar, and that's about it.
What instrument does your son play?
He plays piano. He started out, I insisted that he take band in middle school. I had no reason to believe that he was any kind of musician, but I said, you know, it's a language, and if you're going to be any good at it, childhood is the time to pick it up. So he comes home that day with a tuba, with a giant sousaphone that was bigger than him, and he played the tuba for a couple of years, but then he started noodling around on the piano and taught himself piano, and he's like, he's won two awards locally, one for best jazz album and one for best jazz artist in San Diego. So it's just amazing what happens with people. You know, you don't necessarily know what talents you have when you're born. It's just the moment when I realized he was good is probably the most amazing moment of my life because I had no idea where it came from.
Mm.
It's like when he was young, when he was really little, he used to write fiction. It scared me because I thought, kid, you can't support yourself doing that. You got to get a day job, as we all know.
Uh-huh.
But he's been supporting himself as a musician since he graduated from high school. So basically, that's my life, reading and writing and going to hear my son play.
Well, speaking of that, you mentioned the whole day job concept, and mm-hmm. I saw a note from an editor at a big publisher the other day who was kind of trying to give a reality check to people who don't get it, and he wrote, books sell on average 5,000 copies or less, irrespective of quality.
Right.
Most don't earn out. The Big Five's money comes from brands like a Baldacci, a backlist with a Gatsby, and the small
exactly.
number of books each year that become blockbusters that cover mm-hmm. the losses. That's a pretty brutal industry, isn't it?
Yes, it really is. But the thing is, if you're a reader and if you're all about, like, I can't remember anything from my childhood except reading. It's like, oh, that's when I read Hunchback of Notre Dame. We're in a car. We're going past splendid scenery, and I've got my face in a book.
Mm.
If you live to read, then becoming a writer and being published by somebody you don't know and read by people you don't know is a thrill. And the fact that you're in the Library of Congress, for Pete's sake. I mean, what more do you want? It would be nice to make more money, but so what? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, the thrill of it is, I'll tell you honestly, the thrill is when you go, I went back recently and looked at Winter. I hadn't looked at that novel for years. And I was just looking through it, and I was kind of delighted by, I mean, it's not like I've completely forgotten writing it, but I'd forgotten certain things. And, you know, you read something you've written, and you think, hey, that's pretty good. I mean, you know, it doesn't get any better than that, as far as I'm concerned.
You could actually win the National Book Award, but, you know.
No. No, you have to be zeitgeisty. On top of you have to probably be better than I am, but you also have to somehow be plugged into the moment.
You've got to be zeitgeisty?
Yeah, zeitgeisty.
Okay, yeah.
It's a word. It's not a word.
Well, I know someone who said that the zeit was geisty, and I believed her.
Yeah, it is.
The book is Amy Among the Serial Killers. Jency Willett wrote it. I've been doing this for quite a while, and a number of years ago I had a woman on who wrote true crime. She's actually quite popular. Her name was Anne Rule. Anne worked with Ted Bundy.
I know. That was the most amazing story.
Yeah.
And
to hear her talking about it, whoa. So you have this creepazoid in your story, this just loathsome, creepy, makes your skin crawl weirdo.
Yeah.
I love this character.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a great villain.
Well, yeah.
Do you know him? Have you met someone?
I wasn't sure. You know, it's when you start out these things, you don't necessarily know who it's going to be, but it worked out.
What's your book about?
It's about these two women sort of coming together. You've got an older woman who's never had a child and who has kept to herself aggressively her entire life. And you've got the younger woman whose mother was absolute crap. And it's about them finally sort of coming together. To me, that's what the book's about. But there's also this dismembering serial killer.
Right.
So, you know, the way you do.
Yeah. And Carla, she finds love in this book. And that's a beautiful thing. This guy, I mean, how could he be
isn't he great?
How could he be any nicer or sweeter?
I know.
We keep
He's
waiting for
so
him
great.
To turn into the serial killer, you know.
I know, which of course could happen in a lesser book. I mean, that would be horrible. There's certain things that I won't do. Like I'll never kill a dog in a book, and I would never play with the reader that way. That's just nasty.
Good for you. You know, I had a book on last week where the author killed the dog, and I said, I can't believe you did that. It was a terrible.
Yeah, exactly.
It was an awful dog.
Did you ever read The Yearling when you were a kid?
Oh, sure. Broke my heart.
Oh, yeah. That traumatized me. I can remember sobbing in homeroom. I mean, it was awful. Never again.
That was a Bambi moment. But
God, it was terrible. They made him shoot his own pet deer.
This is awful.
Yeah.
And I cried at Old Yeller, too, of course.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'd see. I knew enough not to even... go there.
So you read a lot. What kind of stuff are you reading these days?
Sadly, I don't read that much anymore because for all the tutoring online work I did, I think I fried my eyes. It's just so...
Mm.
I listen a lot to the best of television, which is a writer's medium. There's a lot of excellent writing going on the best of it. But I did... I have started with audiobooks, and I finally did get around to reading the classics that I had assiduously avoided when I was younger. So I had got thrilling. Middlemarch is amazing, and so is Bleak House, and so is Anna Karenina. I mean, it's very exciting.
Middlemarch is the one that they always cite as the book that they never read.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I avoided it.
Yeah.
But it's actually quite wonderful. Well, I avoided it because in high school they make you read stuff that they shouldn't make you read. They force you to read classics where what they should be doing is forcing you to read fun stuff like Stephen King so you'll enjoy reading. And then when you're old enough to take in the good stuff, I'm not knocking him, but take in the really great stuff, you can do it. I mean, they made us read Mill and the Floss, which frankly was horrible. I mean, maybe it wasn't as bad as I recall, but... Mm-hmm. It was pretty awful.
I completely agree with you. You've got to nurture the love of reading. And how are you going to do that with these boat anchor books?
Yeah, forcing people to read Scarlet Letter when, you know, it's just, you shouldn't do that. Unless they do it by themselves. I mean, I read American Tragedy when I was quite young. And, But I did it voluntarily. Nobody made me. I hate it when people make me read things.
This is Dreiser?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Most, yeah, I thought it was great.
Most people,
I don't know if I'd like it now, but when I was like 13 or 14, I thought it was terrific.
Well, early in the book, you have, I think it was Amy has this sort of pantheon where she has photos of authors.
Yeah.
And there were a couple there where I said, oh, yeah, that those two are in my pantheon, and that would be Mencken and Edith Sitwell.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, you asked me who I read. My form, the people that I read and that I have in my own library, American humorists mostly and stylists of the 30s and 40s. I mean,
Thurber.
Thurber, Benchley, Perelman's unbelievably good.
Mm.
And of course, Mencken was not primarily a humorist. He was a different kind of writer. But they just we used to churn these people out, and they were wonderful. And you can learn so much about style from them.
I found Mencken
without even knowing that that's what you're doing. I mean, they're just great.
I thought Mencken was hilarious.
Oh, he was wonderful and terribly wrong about many things.
Totally wrong.
So
yeah, totally wrong.
Yeah, he was terrific.
He was. Yeah, I miss him.
Yep.
He died right about the time I was born, and I've often thought, wow, maybe I'm him reincarnated.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
No, I know. Anyway, he'd think that was funny.
I think so. So, Jency, you've got this event coming up, and what can you tell me? Do you know much about your co-host, your conversationalist, Rebecca Brickett?
Rebecca, I met her because she did a Zoom interview with me, I don't know, a couple months ago or so, and so we sort of got to be friends doing that, I think. I mean, to the extent that you can be friends with somebody you haven't spent a lot of time with.
Mm-hmm.
She's a wonderful poet and a great interviewer, and she teaches at ASU. And that's basically all I know about her, except that she's terrific.
And that's Arizona State.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Jency will be in conversation with Rebecca, and this is an event being put on by Joseph Beth Booksellers down in Cincinnati. And if you go to their website, you can RSVP to receive a link to join the event, and it'll be this coming Wednesday evening at 7 p.m., this virtual event. You can sit in as Jency chats with Rebecca about this new novel, Amy, Among the Serial Killers. So go to josephbeth.com to receive a link to join that event on Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. And I'm sure that Rebecca is working on her questions right now, and they're going to be much more interesting and compelling than anything that I have asked you.
Well, she's very interesting and compelling herself, so I'm looking forward to it. Will other people be allowed to ask questions, or is this going to be...
You know, I don't know, but I bet if they go to the website at josephbeth.com, I bet they could figure it out, because I honestly don't know the answer to that.
Right.
But that's a very good question. And I'm wondering, what's the question that interviewers never ask you that you would love to answer?
Oh, see, I thought you were going to ask me, what's the question you hate, which is always, you know, where do you get your ideas?
No, I would never ask that.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. You got me. I can't think of what would I like people to ask.
Yeah.
I would like people to tell me what they actually like to read and why. But as far as asking me, I don't know. I can't think of a darn thing. Sorry.
Well, that's okay. I have a secret addiction. Well, not so secret addiction to crime novels.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like who?
Oh, everybody. I read them all.
Yeah, I did a piece recently that for Crime Meets that they'll publish about whydunits as opposed to whodunits.
Uh-huh.
I think whydunits are so much better. I really like Ruth. Do you read Ruth Rendell? Obviously, I think she's dead.
I have read her. Yeah, she's gone.
She's wonderful.
Uh-huh.
There's also a woman named Kate Atkinson. Who
I've interviewed
really
her.
Well.
She's great.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
She's fantastic.
Yeah.
And I don't know who else.
Well, there's so many good ones out there.
Oh, there really are. I remember liking Ross McDonald and his wife, Margaret Miller. I haven't read these in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. There are a lot of really wonderful. When I was very young, I loved the Lockroom stuff and the Agatha Christie stuff, but I outgrew that. To me, what makes for a really good mystery, among other things, is character. You need interesting characters.
Mm-hmm.
Characters that can surprise you, that aren't cardboard, you know.
And, well, when we finally get to the end of your book and the the showdown with the serial killer, which we know is going to happen. It's got to happen eventually. You had fun with that, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. And the thing that happens that we won't talk about, is I think would actually really work. But, you know, if you were fighting for your life, I think this device would actually, but I could be wrong. But we won't say what it was.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I've just always been sure that pepper spray would be terrible. I mean, why? I know I would spray myself in the face. I mean, how could you'd have to stop and look at the nozzle and make sure it was pointing in the right direction, and then during that time you would be killed.
Uh-huh.
Just wouldn't work.
Yeah. And Amy's little dog is one of my favorite characters. You're clearly a dog lover. Do you have a dog now?
Well, interesting thing about that, yeah, she's based on my dog Maisie, and the other two Amy books had a basset hound in it that was based on a basset hound that I had named Koa. His name is Alphonse, and he actually, I think, helped to sell the books. It turns out dogs really sell books,
mm-hmm.
and I think bassets probably more than anything. I mean, everybody loves bassets. And it's easy to write about dogs. It's hard to write about people, but I'm flailing around trying to think of something, I can always throw in a scene with a dog and because they're great.
Well, we are really learning the craft here, Jency.
Yeah, just put a dog, put a basset in your book, and you'll sell like hotcakes.
The book is Amy Among the Serial Killers, and I'm wondering who came up with that title?
Me.
Okay.
And I can remember being told that it was, somebody said, it's not a good title. And actually, I think it turns out that it is a good title. So, you know, it's, I don't know. To me, it sort of was obvious. It's like Amy Falls Down was obvious. You just say what it's about in the title.
Uh-huh. Well, I like the title. And it's really, it's very self-explanatory.
Right.
That's exactly what it is.
And yeah.
As we go through the story, we have all these weird things happening. We're, of course, as a reader, trying to figure out, well, who is the actual serial killer? And I think you did a very fine job of throwing us off.
Oh, good.
I had my suspicions of this person, but I was not convinced until we actually get to the point where the axe appears. And then I'm like, okay, this makes
sense. Yeah, that's not good. An axe is never good. Well, I come from Rhode Island, which is close to Fall River, so that's the patron saint of horrible killers is Lizzie Borden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
she never went to prison, though, did she?
No, she didn't. She became a feminist heroine, and then I think afterwards people realized that, really, I mean, she really did it. They threw out, I think they had all the evidence they needed, but they had to throw it out for some reason. And so she lived out the rest of her life.
Hmm.
And now I think the house that she killed her parents in is a B&B or something.
Lovely.
Just kind of, yeah, that's lovely.
Well, Jency, it's really been a pleasure talking to you.
Ditto. Thank you so much, Vic.
My guest has been Jency Willett. Her book is Amy Among the Serial Killers. And if you want information, if you want to RSVP for their virtual event on Wednesday night, August 24th at 7 p.m., put on by Joseph Beth, just go to josephbeth.com to get that link for the event and other information. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McInnes. Thanks, as always, for listening.